Hello there, it's Paul Harvey, and today I'm going to bring you the most popular show from 2020. It's Brian Clayton, the Uber of lawn care. Do make sure you subscribe so you catch the Sunday reflection, because this week it's about passion, purpose, and the things that we have to let go of along the way. But right now, I'm going to leave with Brian Clayton, the Uber of lawn care.
Always being ahead of my skis, so to speak, was something that I had to get comfortable with very early. And the notion of if you're scared or if you're uncomfortable, it's usually an indicator that you're in the right place.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. My guest on the program today is Brian Clayton, and he is the Uber of grass cutting. Brian has a fascinating story. At 13 years old and playing his Nintendo, his dad made him go out and cut the neighbor's lawn. The neighbor paid him $20. And he got to wonder how many lawns he could cut. By the time he was in high school, he had over 200 customers. And fast forward a few years, while at college, he was employing 5 people. On graduation, there was a choice: take a pay cut and get a job, or build the business. Brian went on to create one of the largest landscaping businesses in Tennessee. His employees were family. The business gave interest-free loans to change lives for their families. We're talking about sending kids to college and building a supermarket in Guatemala. By 2013, he had taken that business to 150 employees and over $10 million in revenue, and it was time to move on. So he sold the company to Lucia Holdings. He tried retirement for a while, but needed a bit more of a challenge. He realized how difficult it was for homeowners to get a reliable lawn care. And seeing the growth of Uber and other services, he thought, oh, how difficult would it be to create an app to do the job? What followed was an 8-year journey and lots of personal development. GreenPal this year will break through $20 million. The business is so much more than a simple booking system. The homeowner gets quotes within 60 seconds. The grass cutter gets a business in a box. The app does everything from sending the quote to booking the appointment and taking the payment. And just like his previous business, Brian has created something that is really making a difference and changing lives for all involved. What started as a simple chore to cut the neighbor's lawn has grown into something that changes many lives. From my perspective, Brian is a role model, and his life story is one of living on the edge with personal development and leadership. It's a truly inspiring story and well worth a listen. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Brian Clayton as much as I did. So before we start the program, I'd just like to ask you if you've completed an audience survey. If you can, it's just 5 minutes, and you can find the details at lifepassionandbusiness.com. So welcome to Life, Passion and Business. I am delighted today to be with Brian Clayton, and he is the Uber for lawn mowing. Now that's going to take some unpacking, isn't it? We're going to explore that one. So Brian, thank you for taking some time out today to be with me on the show. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm great. Awesome. And it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
That's great. Great, great. Love the accent. You know, I'm the Brit, so I love the accent.
Can you tell us a Southern accent?
I can tell you a Southern accent.
So okay, good.
Listeners, whereabouts are you? Whereabouts are you in the world?
Nashville, Tennessee.
Right. Okay. Elvis country?
That's Memphis, but that's our neighbor.
Oh, okay, sorry. I don't know. I'm a Brit. You see, I've complexity. I am a Londoner living in Scotland. So there you go.
Ah, got it.
There you go. So tell me, sir. So what's the story? What is the story? How did you get to do what you're doing now? Because, all right, we'll get to Uber for lawn mowing, but there's probably a story behind that one.
So yeah, I've never actually had a boss. I've always owned my own businesses. My first business was a grass cutting service in high school. My dad forced me to mow my first yard when I was 13 years old. He made me mow the neighbor's yard.
Wow.
And he and I went and cut the neighbor's grass and made $20. And ever since then, I was just hooked. I was hooked on owning my own business and hooked on setting my own path and my own way.
I'd imagine at 13 earning $20 is actually quite a bit of money at that time, wasn't it?
It was a lot of money. It was more money than I was making playing Nintendo, which is what he interrupted.
It's probably quite a good thing to teach you, isn't it, really? Save on pocket money, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so I just started mowing yards all through high school. And by the time I was in college, I had five people working for me. And over 15 years period of time, I grew that little lawn mowing business with just myself and a push mower to one with over 150 employees.
Wow.
And it was one of the biggest landscaping companies in the state of Tennessee. In 2013, I sold that company to one of the largest landscape maintenance companies in the United States. And I kind of retired after that, got bored and decided, okay, what's the next thing I want to build? And for me, it was obvious, was I saw what technology was doing for ride sharing and what it was doing like for accommodations with Airbnb. And I thought, okay, this has to exist. There has to be an easier way for homeowners to hire a solid lawn mowing service. And so I recruited two co-founders and we've just been heads down building the Uber for lawn mowing services over the last 5-6 years.
Wow. Okay. So that's the potted history bit. So let's unpack it a little bit more, because hang on a minute. If you were that young, running that number of people, what was that like? Because, I mean, you know, you were in college running a team of people, if you like, cutting grass.
Right, right.
Probably must have been older than you were, I imagine.
To that point, yes. Almost everybody who ever worked for me up until in the last 5 years has been older than me. And so that was a little weird, being 22 years old and having people in their 30s work for me. Mm. And a lot of it was just trial and error, trying to learn how to do things like recruit good staff and keep them happy and making it a win-win and being a good manager and being a good leader. These were all things that I had to learn the hard way just through trial and error, especially in those early days.
Mm.
I was lucky though. My business was something in my life that caused me to level up, caused me to be a better, really a better man almost, to force me to learn new skills and things that I never would have learned otherwise, because the marketplace pulls that out of you as a business owner. It requires you to be a better person, better leader, better manager. And so I've always looked at my businesses that way, is, okay, this is like almost my vehicle for upward mobility, my vehicle for personal development. And certainly in those early days, it was. By the time I was 25, I had 30 or 40 people working for me, and I was always in over my head, but I was able to hold it together and continue to grow the business and operate
that's
a successful
key,
company.
That's the key, isn't it? Scare yourself. When you scare yourself, you expand beyond that point. And I mean, that's something I don't do anywhere near enough of.
But well, as I got a little bit of success, I got a little comfortable, and that's one reason why I sold that business in year 15, was that I had taken it as far as I could. And I had realized that I had reached a personal plateau with where I was going as a business owner. And I wanted to do the next challenge.
Yeah.
And so that's why I started the next business. I had to reinvent myself from a blue collar, like a contractor type of business, to a technology-based business. And that has been a lot harder.
I want to step back a minute. Do you think you'd have been, if you hadn't been scaring yourself early, because I mean, starting that business when you were 13, 14, 15, that must have been very scary what you were doing there. If you hadn't been doing that, taking those risks then, do you think you'd be taking the same risk now?
It's a very good point. Yeah, in the early days, always being ahead of my skis, so to speak, was something that I had to get comfortable with very early. And the notion of, if you're scared or if you're uncomfortable, it's usually an indicator that you're in the right place. There's a quote, Mario Andretti, he says, if you feel like you're in control, you're not going fast enough. And so in those early days, being a teenager and having, you know, 200 customers that I had to keep up with and manage and make sure they were happy, was was something that was always way above my skill sets. And I've just kind of followed through with that kind of ethos for the last 20 years running businesses of always being ill-equipped for what I was handling at the time. And still even to this day, you know, I'm dealing with things that I'm having to learn as I go and having to surround myself with people who are smarter than me to tackle them.
Yeah. So the question and the opening question is about passion. So what where is the passion in lawn mowing for you? I mean, how did that, you know, like, I can understand the money when you were younger, but there must have been something driving you other than, I mean, maybe it just was the money, but you know, you stuck with it, you know.
It's a good point. It's a very good question. So in the early days, yeah, I was making really good money, and that was the motivating driving force of why I wanted to stay in business for myself. In fact, when I graduated college, I had to make a decision that, okay, I'm either going to double down on this business or I'm going to go into the job market. And it was a really simple choice for me because I would have had to take a major pay cut to do that. So, my profit motivated a lot of my early decision making. But then as that business grew to 50, 75, 100 people, I began to realize that this thing that I had created was no longer just about me. It was about the whole family, the culture that we had built there. And I began to realize that I had created something that had its own identity, and it was its own living kind of organism. And that was where a lot of the passion came from, was when the business wins, our people win. When we are making money, our people are able to get pay raises. And we did something really fun year 12 or 13 in that business. We would give interest-free loans to anyone in our company that would present a sort of pitch to us. And they would say, okay, I want to build a little supermarket in my hometown in Guatemala. We had a lot of immigrant workers that worked for that company. And so we would fund that. We would loan them $50,000 or $100,000 to build a little market back home in Guatemala. And then we would get status updates. Okay, how's that going? Oh, it's growing. It's making money. My family's making money there. And like all because we loaned them that money interest free, was that prosperity able to happen? And so a lot of these, we did a lot of those things where we would fund a college, we would fund somebody's college here or help somebody buy a new car or a new house or all sorts of cool things 3 or 4 times a year.
That is where the passion is. Really a different type of business, isn't it? That does. And that's really is where you say you can see some passion in that. That's
right. Oh, made it so much fun. And because everybody was bought in, we weren't just cutting grass. We were building this, this company where if the company won, everybody won. And so it was a very symbiotic thing that made it fun running.
Is that a common thing in the US? Because I've heard of that in very large companies, but I've not heard of that in kind of the smaller businesses. Is that common?
It's, I think, well, for me, my business was like an extension of who I am. And so for me, I wanted it to be like myself was scaffolding built around me. And that's just kind of the way I am. I like to, I feel like if others are benefiting around me, then I'm going to win. And so that's how the philosophy that I kind of hit on as I scaled that company. And so I believe that a lot of mid-sized and small businesses, that's the competitive advantage against the bigger boys, is that you can do fun things like that with your culture.
Yeah.
You can do cool things like that, unique things, because you can operate nimble and lean, and you can really build a team of Navy SEALs around you. Because there's that trust that you build with them. Whereas with the bigger companies, they're just a number on a spreadsheet. With you, they're literally a family member. And so that's where you get that discretionary effort from your team members. And for us, that was a competitive advantage for a very long time. And really one of the reasons why the company was acquired was because it had such a strong culture. When people that wanted to buy that business came to our office and toured it, they could just feel that. They could get a sense for that when they talk to our people.
That
same
level
story.
If you've got that level of care that you do, it's going to come through, isn't it? It's so going to come through.
Yes, right. And it's hard. It's hard to go back and like install that. No. You really have to like cultivate that in the early days and build it as you grow.
So you obviously got this business to a certain stage, and it was no longer you couldn't take it to the next stage, so you sold it. So what happened to it? Is it still around?
Still around, and still one of the biggest landscaping companies in Nashville. Here we are 8 years later. I drive around town and I see the trucks with the branding on the side of it. I'm like, yep, I built that, or I helped build that. And so that's still fun for me to see something that I built 20 years ago still thriving, still growing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my same people are still there. So they've taken that company.
You left this project. You have a big wedge of cash in your hand now. So do you retire?
Yeah, I thought about it. And I did take some time off. And I did do some investing for a while in different things like real estate and kind of set myself up to not have to work anymore. But then I started to really realize that for me, my businesses really are the thing that keeps driving me forward. And it, like to use a metaphor for like a stream going through the woods, if that stream is not moving, it bogs down with fungus and sticks and debris and beer cans and just mire and muck. And it really is not a pleasant thing. But if the stream is moving, it becomes vibrant and it's flowing and it's clean and it's beautiful. And that's really kind of a philosophy I have for my life, is to always be driving forward, always be moving forward. And my business is the thrust that causes that.
Humans need a purpose, so they start breaking things.
Yeah, absolutely. and there's only so many beaches you can lay on.
If you stop doing something and it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, and you're used to solving like major problems not on a daily basis, an hourly basis.
Yeah.
And then you switch gears to you're hanging out, you know, in a beach somewhere in Costa Rica, and the biggest problem you have is the bar doesn't have your flavor of vodka that you like. And it's like, you get to a point where you...
That's
you
not scary. You're not scaring hunger. Yourself with that, yeah. Is it?
Right. And it's not that I like, problems. I don't. I enjoy when things are going smoothly. However, I like winning. I like setting objectives and knocking them down. And that's what I was missing.
Yeah. So obviously you went into something really easy and you decided to do something really, really doddle, didn't you? Set up a...
Man.
I know you told me part of this story before, so I know I'm well aware of it. But go on, tell us the story. How did you go and set up the Uber for lawnmowing? What does it mean?
Yeah, it's so if I had known how hard it was going to be, I'd have never gotten started. It's been a challenge building this company. When we first got started, I underestimated what was going to be involved with reinventing myself to become a technology-based entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I literally thought that my two co-founders and I were going to pay a development agency to build this thing, and we would release it and just market it, and then we would just be off to the races. And nothing was further from the truth. We wasted $130,000 with a local shop here in Nashville to build the product, and it was total garbage. And we released it, and after the first year, we had 23 customers. Half of those, I think 12 of those, were friends and family.
Okay.
And so it was a total flop. And we had to take a step back and understand, okay, if we're going to be tech entrepreneurs, we have to understand how to develop and build technology. And we had to reinvent ourselves, literally. My co-founder started studying Ruby on Rails engineering, and I started studying product development and growth. My other co-founder started studying front end development. And so we took another year to teach ourselves these skills and to build the next version ourselves. And that is the version that we're working on today. And fast forward today, we have over 200,000 users that use this product on a weekly basis to get their lawn mowing done. And we're on track to surpass $20 million in revenue this year.
Wow.
Our first year we had something like $20,000. So it's started off very, very, very small, and it was very humbling starting over again. But then again, like, it's taught me things about life, and it's helped cultivate who I am as a person. And these are skills I never would have learned had I not started this business.
That's amazing. So do you want to explain exactly what the business does? Because it's like, I mean, I get the idea is that people can use their phone and book someone to come and mow their lawn.
And yeah, so absolutely. So So you wouldn't think it'd be hard to find us a reliable lawn mowing service to just come and cut your grass on a consistent basis, but it actually is. It's hard to get these guys on the phone. It's hard to get them to show up on time. It's difficult to pay them. It's difficult to just get a consistent, clean, quality job done. GreenPal simplifies all that. Rather than a homeowner having to call and poll 10 or 20 lawn mowing services to come mow their yard, they can just jump on our app or on our website, enter their address one time, and they'll get five quotes back in less than 60 seconds. They can then read reviews about these lawn mowing services in their neighborhood and understand, okay, how often do they show up on time? What do their customers have to say about them? How often do their customers book them for a second mowing? All of this data around these small service providers who are within a mile from them. And then they can hire one right off the shelf, kind of like on Amazon or on Uber. And they can schedule them for the day they want. The lawn mowing service comes out and mows the yard, and they just pay cleanly through the app. And after that first service goes well, they can book them for weekly or every 2 week mowings for the rest of the lawn mowing season. And as long as they stay in that home.
And the app processes the payment, and then you guys clear it, and then the people get paid.
That's correct. And it's just a seamless, beautiful, magical touch of a button, get something done experience for the homeowner.
Yeah.
On the other side of the transaction, for the lawn mowing professional, we build an entire platform for that pro to run their entire business on top of. So rather than them having to hand out flyers and mail out invoices or try to get a check under the mat or get somebody to Venmo or PayPal them for every single lawn mowing, everything just happens automatically in the background for them, to where they can just focus on what they're good at, which is mowing yards,
mowing lawns.
That's right.
That's brilliant. And that's actually really brilliant for them, isn't it? Because a lot of them are probably not traditional businessmen per se. They're manual workers. They're people that mow lawns.
They're good at their craft.
They
are, like, to use an analogy, they're really good at making delicious cakes and pies. They're not good at running a bakery. And so for us, we simplify all of that stuff that nobody really thinks about when it comes to small business. We handle all of that for them from our technology, to where they can focus on running a profitable lawn mowing business and showing up when they need to and keeping their clients happy.
Mm-hmm. Do you take a cut from the lawn mowing process, or do they pay a set fee? How does it work?
We take just a 5% fee for every transaction that they run through the platform. And so it's a really small fee that makes it to where they can still earn material, meaningful income off of the platform.
So what can someone earn? I mean, what's a good earning for someone, one of these guys?
Our goal is for anybody that wants to work hard to make over $100,000 a year cutting grass on our platform. And we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of examples of people doing just that.
That's a good salary in the U.S., isn't it?
That's right. And so that's for us material income. If we're only driving a landscaping professional a couple hundred bucks here and there, it's not worth it for them or us.
No.
We it's our goal to enable them to be able to quit their job and to enter the landscaping maintenance business full time and be in business for themselves and make twice the money they could as a teacher or working for another landscaping maintenance company or as a sales rep or whatever. You know, we have examples in every industry of people literally starting their own lawn mowing business, starting with our platform.
So how does your previous company feel about this app that you've developed?
So we don't really compete head to head with any established big landscaping companies,
right?
Because our sweet spot is just basic residential lawn mowing. And so this is just somebody who needs this simple service done and doesn't want to have to pay an arm and a leg for it. Your big landscaping companies, like what I ended up building, operate in the commercial space.
Yeah.
So apartment complexes, things like that. So there's really no overlap there. Matter of fact, they refer us because this is where I got the idea, was running that big business. We would get 40 phone calls a day. Hey, can you come mow my yard? Can you come mow my yard? We didn't do that. We would actually refer them out to smaller providers. Well, these big landscaping companies refer GreenPal and say, listen, that's too small a job for us, but you can just use this app and get a small, you know, get a good fit instantly. And so there's really no head to head there. Matter of fact, we we make it easy for like all the smaller guys to build good sized businesses. Now, where there is a little, probably a little bit of irritation is that, let's say you have a landscaping company that has 50 employees. There's really no reason for somebody to run a crew for you when they can jump on GreenPal and be in business for themselves.
Yeah.
And so we're seeing a lot of that. And I feel like that's where the industry is going to go, where more smaller providers are in business for themselves and less big guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And the big guys will have to buy the equipment rather than renting in guys to do it for them. That's what's going to happen. They'll have to.
Exactly.
So it'll stratify the market all the more, I guess, in terms of big and small. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's our vision, is to empower thousands of small business owners to be in business for themselves rather than having to work for somebody.
Yeah. So, all right, I mean, this is a fascinating story. What was the worst moment in all of this for you? What's been the worst moments that you've had?
Oh, wow. Man, the first year, 2 years, when we launched that first version and nobody used it, we had no user acquisition strategy. So we had no real repeatable way to get people to use it. So we just started passing out door hangers all over Nashville, Tennessee.
Right.
We passed out over 100,000 of these, you know, little flyers on people's doors.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, even to this day, 8 years later, I can close my eyes and I can understand how to hang a door hanger on somebody's door. I've done it so many times. And so probably one of the worst moments was one day we were doing that, my two co-founders and I, on a hot July day here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I got bit by a dog and was bleeding, and I literally had to go home. And so it was in that moment, I was like, what the hell am I doing?
The whole idea of you guys, you know, tech guys delivering leaflets, the whole thing just doesn't really fit, is it?
I know, man. I know. It was so humbling. But yeah, that was one of the low points. And we started to understand, okay, one dog bite for every five customers is not a repeatable marketing strategy. So in that, some good lessons were learned that we had to like back up and understand a better way to get customers. So yeah, that was one of the low points. Other than that, we've been lucky. We haven't had any real just bad luck things, no lawsuits or anything like that. It's just been a slow, steady grind to where we are now. You know,
consistency pays, isn't it? Consistency
absolutely
is the answer.
That's it, man. In this business, especially, and what has taught me going through the COVID crisis right now is that we're staying steady. We're actually growing. It's almost like it's not happening. And what I've learned is what goes up slow comes down slow. And so there is stability and sustainability in what we're doing. And so, you know, sometimes be careful what you wish for. You really, sometimes you don't want that rocket ship because it's hard to land it. And so for us, you know, we put in the work, we put in the time, and we've got some good momentum now. I'm at the time, you know, I wish it had gone faster, but now I'm kind of happy it went the way it went.
You said about rocket ships, and you see these Kickstarter deals and things. I saw a Kickstarter the day for a plant pot, which is a clever idea. You put water in it and it grows the plants on the outside. It's like terracotta. It kind of weeps water.
Ah, cool.
And they were looking for $15,000.
Yeah.
They got 3.5 million.
Yeah,
so it's like, what do you do when you get that level of success? It's like, shit, what are you going to do now?
That's going to force a binary outcome for that entrepreneur. He's either going to like hit a grand slam or he's going to go to zero. Whereas if he had raised $100,000, he could really grow that thing into something sustainable. And
I don't think
I
don't think the mind can take that difference, that sudden cash jump. It's like, you know, lottery winners invariably lose the money within 18 months or 2 years. They just can't they can't take that shift.
Rarely does it get deployed effectively. Most of the time, a bet, you know, when an entrepreneur raises outside capital, most of the time it's a bad bet. And a lot of times you see the Ubers, the Lyfts, DoorDash, you know, these companies killing it. And what we don't understand looking from the outside in is that entrepreneur is on his third or her third, fourth, or fifth time. They've crashed and burned four other companies learned all the lessons and are applying all of that to this thing. Mm-hmm. And if you're a first-time entrepreneur and you're raising $1 million, $5 million, $10 million, it's usually a bad bet because it's going to like be like putting rocket boosters on the side of a barn and it's just going to blow apart. And so, you know, that's just my philosophy.
Well, I've heard this, but you can't stick high octane fuel, can you, in a shitty old car? It's just not going to work. It's just going to blow the valves out the side, isn't it? And that's what happens when you overfuel something. I'm enjoying myself here, which is a disaster because this means this could go on far too long. So I need to rein myself in. So tell me, the next question is, because we're running out of time. Well, we're not running out of time, but we're just running out of time. Question, what is the success model for you? Obviously, early on, it was definitely about money. And by the sounds of it, that shifted.
Absolutely. For me, it's still, there's still a profit piece to the motivation. Mm. But it's about creating something that's just bigger than myself that helps thousands of people. Whereas, you know, my last business, I could help hundreds. And now I can literally help. We have 10,000 service providers that use the platform to operate their livelihood. Mm. We have a lady in Atlanta, Georgia, that is a single mother, and she started mowing 3 yards on our platform and now has over 300 customers on a weekly basis in Atlanta, Georgia. And she's a single mom, and she has 5 people working for her, and she has done it all on the GreenPal platform. Wow. For me, I have a picture of this lady in my office. For me, that is the reason why I get out of bed. That's
Can I have a picture of her for the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
I think that's a fantastic story. That is just absolutely. So lovely, isn't it? Yeah, that's changing lives. That is success to me. That is really
that's
success.
That's why we do what we do.
Success
here.
Beyond your own success. That is really is. It's the same as the supermarket in Guatemala. It's the same story, isn't it, really? It's just wonderful.
Yes, and that's it's just fun to be a part of that. Yeah. And we have a Facebook group that a lot of our vendors are part of, and they celebrate these things. I just bought a new truck. Because of GreenPal, or I just hired a new employee, or I just bought a house. That's a lot of fun being able to help give them access to this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Really brilliant. Really good. So have you got family, by the way? Have you got family coming into the business yourself?
Well, no family members in the business, but no. I do have an older brother who's got 4 kids. I don't have any kids myself,
right?
But he's got 4 kids, and so I like to think of myself as a good uncle. I do jujitsu with my 15-year-old nephew, and we have a lot of fun doing that.
Oh, that's interesting. That's fascinating.
So, yeah, for me, I've always my baby has always been my business.
Right.
That may change one day, but as far as family is concerned, family is everything to me. And you know, I like to think that I'm a good role model to my nieces and nephews.
I'm sure you are, especially having done what you've done. So do you see yourself retiring?
Not in the sense of not doing anything. I read a stat somewhere where when people retire and there's, you know, I just turned 40, but when people retire in their 60s or 70s, statistically, they're usually dead 3 years later. Ooh. And that just hit home to me. I told my dad this the other day. He's 72, and he's thinking about retiring. I said, "Man, I don't know if it's a good idea." I told him that, and it hit home to him too. And so for me, I think, you know, at some capacity, it'd always be part of building something.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes, George Patton. He says, "If you're not gaining ground, you are losing ground." And I believe that it's just part of me. I have to be crushing something. So I don't see it anytime soon. I love building businesses.
Your dad must feel very proud of you considering he started you on this path.
Yeah. Without my mom and dad, I wouldn't be where I am. My dad taught me the value of hard work and how to just grind and how to hustle. And my mom taught me the value of a job well done. She taught me quality. She taught me, you know, she taught me not to do things half-assed. And those two things are really, you know, foundational to the type of just entrepreneur that I am. We don't do things. We put a good quality product out. We don't do things half-assed here. And we work. We grind. Nobody's going to out-hustle us. And so it's funny. Those two things I learned as a teenager from my mom and dad, still here 20-something years later, are just part of principles that I operate my business today on. And so without them teaching me those lessons at that age, I wouldn't be where I am.
No, I'm sure, absolutely. My next question is about contribution, but I think you've answered your contribution. I don't think you need to ask the question. Your contribution is clearly what you do and what you give out to the world. So unless you have anything, do you have any more to say on that?
You know, for me, it all does come back to my businesses. My contribution is I'm trying to build a business where we do well by helping others.
Yeah.
And that is my contribution. You know, if I died tomorrow, I would hope that people would say good things about me because I was willing to help others be successful as I was becoming successful. And so that's part of a principle that I live my life from. And it all does map back to the engine of prosperity in my life, which is the business that I'm working on at that time.
Mm. Yeah. This is good. So what's the one question I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Any regrets?
Well, that's always a good one, isn't it, really? I mean, they're pointless, really, but have you got any?
Any regrets?
If you can't go back and change them. They are bloody pointless. Yeah. But hey, you know, we all have a few.
I started looking at my regrets, not as regrets, but as lessons.
Yeah.
And so, I took some wrong turns building both companies. And one of my regrets and lessons in the first business was not taking on a mentor early enough and not listening to people who are smarter than me early enough. Mm. I was very, I thought I could do it all. And I really thought that I had all the answers for far too many years. And that just cost me probably 5 to 6 years of just spinning my wheels. So I wish I had learned earlier to seek out the counsel of people who are smarter than me, understanding they were smarter than me, and learning from them.
Yeah,
that's a lesson or a regret that I have, because I no telling where I could be today.
And that's the amazing thing, isn't it? I mean, coaching is just absolutely essential in the top businesses. For a business anyway, you have to have a mentor or a coach or someone to take it forward. And no one questions it on a sports person. You wouldn't even consider someone winning something in sports without a coach.
Right.
And yet people think they can run a business without a coach, and it's just
silly. And these days, you know, it's so accessible.
Yes.
You have podcasts like this, you have YouTube, you have Masterclass, Udemy, Udacity, all of these ways that we can learn from people who are better at what we're than what we're trying to do. They're better at it. And so and back then in the 90s, this stuff really wasn't that accessible, but today it is. Get a coach, even if it's just somebody that you follow and trying to learn from them. Start with that and until you can afford a real coach. Hmm. That is a key thing that I wish I had done a lot earlier.
But you can join accountability groups and those sort of things for like $30 exactly. a month sort of thing. And those are just exactly. as good. At least they'll hold you to account. And people will say to you, no, that's wrong. Or they know, kick absolutely. Up the ass on that one. It's I mean, I have one too, you know, and there have been times when I've been on calls and, you know, I've had my ass kicked seriously.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, thank you.
We all need that.
So, I mean, do you coach and mentor people now yourself? Are you up for that sort of thing? I mean, if someone wants to reach out and contact you and say, cool, could you help me out?
Yeah, great question. So I do, and I do it for free for half a dozen business owners in my community, and I get a lot of fun out of it. And I do it just because it helps me kind of crystallize my business philosophies, my business principles. Mm. And I love seeing people around me win.
Yeah.
And so I do coach and mentor, and I like doing it. And so, yeah, if anybody that's listening to this wants to reach out to me and get my feedback on something, I'd be glad to give it to them. My email is brian@yourgreenpal.com.
Wow. Email out on a public format.
I'm glad to help. You know,
how would people find you? Are you on social media and stuff?
On Twitter, Brian M. Clayton. Okay. And that's the best way to get in touch with me on social.
Okay. All right. And so we'll have those links on the podcast and anyone can find them easy enough.
Awesome.
So moving to the last question on this podcast, which is the big question of life, really, is like, you know, we are animals born to this world as animals and we eat shit and die ultimately, you know, and like, but humans obviously have this idea that we have a purpose to it all. So what do you think is the meaning of life for you?
Meaning of life for me is sowing seeds that benefit others and trying to create prosperity around me. I'd like to think that anybody that knows me knows that I add value and I try to give value before I take. And I, as part of why I do what I do, is part of a principle that I live my life by. And it's really part of the meaning for, of life for me is to focus on how I can help somebody before I ask anything from them, and to try to create opportunity for whether it's my business partners or people that use a product that I'm building, or whether it be, like I mentioned, my nephew, trying to, you know, work with him in martial arts. It's wherever it applies, you know, goes in my life. It's trying to add value and help people get what they're trying to get out of life. That for me is why I get out of bed in the morning.
That sounds brilliant. So that's it. I'm out of questions. I've had a great time. Thank you so much for exploring this. It's been really interesting. And
thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You certainly are a role model. I think that's what how I.
You're gonna give me a big head.
Well, I think it's amazing what the journey you've had, and I think it's wonderful what you're achieving. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today.
Hey, thank you.
All the best.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Brian Clayton. If you would like to contact Brian, you can find him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and at his website, yourgreenpal.com. If you've completed our survey, I'd like to say a big thank you for your contribution. If you have not, it's just 5 minutes and you can find that survey at lifepassionandbusiness.com. We really need your feedback because it does help us develop the program. I'm most appreciative for all those who have contributed so far. So I will be back on Sunday with my Sunday reflections, and this week we're looking at the random question. That's all for this week. Thank you for your time and attention, and I will catch you next time.